ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
Every parent can appreciate how challenging it is to raise a child in society today. We all find ourselves asking, what do we need to do to see our kids develop into successful and resilient adults? The answer might become clearer as a result of a new national study looking at how the experiences that kids have interact with each other and with their changing bodies. On this edition of UWM Today, we meet Krista Lisdahl, an associate professor of psychology who's part of the longest and largest long-term study of brain development and child health in the United States. Welcome, Krista. Good to have you with us. So proud to have you as a member of the UWM family.
It's great to be here.
So this long-term study looking at brain development, I guess we should first start with how kids' brains develop versus the brains that we're carrying around after several decades of life.
Yeah. So the ABCD study is actually following kids from starting at ages 9 and 10 all the way through at least 10 years. And so it's a really phenomenal opportunity to study that transition from kind of school-age childhood into early and late adolescence. What we know so far is that the adolescent brain is still developing all the way up to about age 25 or so, where it starts to reach its fully adult state. And that includes kind of pruning back of gray matter, the neurons in the brain, and increasing of white matter, which are really the connections in the brain. And what happens is that the adolescent to young adult brain starts to become more efficient. It actually is smaller in volume from a child brain, which sounds counterintuitive, but it's kind of like pruning your bushes, you know. So you want to prune it, and the healthiest branches continue to branch out and grow and create connections. So the brain becomes more and more specialized as a child advances through adolescence into young adulthood. The other thing that's going on is an onset of several psychological disorders and also changes in behavior. And adolescents become much more independent and they start engaging in new behavioral activities such as using substances or changing their exercise patterns. So it's really the onset of kind of new disorders, and we're trying to understand that transition and who's really at risk to develop some of those disorders.
So you have this intersection of kids trying new things, having new experiences at the same time that the organ that processes all of this is itself going through changes.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the only point in your life where you've got this sort of clash between the physical development and the emotions and the experiences all sort of rushing together?
It's certainly a unique stage. Obviously, you know, prenatal environment, childhood, early childhood is another, you know, really flourishing developmental stage. And the good news is we continue to develop throughout our lives. You know, it's never too late to learn new things and
thank goodness.
Evolve, you know, thank goodness. But adolescence really does seem to be this golden opportunity where prevention programs and interventions actually have a greater impact than if you were doing them in adulthood. But also some of the more negative behaviors can also have a greater impact. So we're really trying to understand resilience and also risk so that we can use this opportunity to really set someone up to have the absolute best development into their adult years as they can.
So Milwaukee is part of this study. The Milwaukee area is part of this national study. Let's talk about just how big it is and how many kids you're looking at.
Yeah. So there are 22 research sites. There's also a coordinating center at the University of California, San Diego, and the ever-important data center at the UCSD as well. And so UWM is one of the 22 research sites that are actually enrolling kids. So right now, we've enrolled about 240 kids, and we're looking for a little over 100 more kids and families to enroll. We're enrolling through August. And overall, within the consortium, we've already enrolled 8,300 kids. So that's great news. And we're looking to get up to around 11,500 for this baseline session.
So what are the criteria for a child to qualify or not qualify to be part of this long-term study?
Yeah, we're really looking for lots of different types of kids. So there's very few things that are exclusionary. Someone who has a very severe neurologic disorder that might, you know, really severely impact neural development might be excluded, but pretty much everyone else is eligible. We really want a very diverse group that really represents the United States. That's one of the real opportunities of this study, is that it's going to be – it's not just kind of middle class, white, healthy kids. You know, it's – we want kids from all sorts of backgrounds, all sorts of ethnicities, socioeconomic status. We want kids from rural areas and the city, so we can kind of look at all these different environmental and cultural factors as well.
What I found really interesting as I read about the study is that you not only are asking questions, but you're actually using testing equipment to map the brain, to look at the brain at the same time that you're studying the behavior that's mm-hmm. being managed by the brain.
Yeah, this is a really phenomenally exciting study, actually, because it's – we have a culture and environment group, you know, that are really experts in, you know, even air quality in the region that someone's growing up, or how close are they to highways to see how that might impact their health. We look at things like environmental factors. We can actually measure them in baby teeth. So we can look at prenatally, were they exposed to certain metals and such like that. But on the other side, we have the absolute most advanced neuroimaging that's available to us right now. And it's harmonized across all these different MRI machines and the different 22 sites. And we're going to be able to look at the brain structure, but also what's going on in the brain when they're engaging in certain types of tasks, like looking at reward or problem solving. And then we can also look at the white matter microstructure. So it's really amazing technology. We also do cognitive testing, and we've really gamified everything. So everything's on an iPad. We make it really fun for the kids. You know, these are 9 and 10-year-olds right now. So they engage in all these different games, and we make it really fun.
So you're using functional MRIs where you actually can monitor the brain as they're interacting?
Yes, yes.
It's so not just laying in a machine and
no, so they some of it is laying in the machine, you know, watching a movie while we're really looking at the brain structure. But about half of it is in actually engaging in different types of cognitive tasks, so we can see what their brain is doing and how different brain areas are communicating.
Wow, that's just – it's fascinating that kids that young, you know, would get into it, would agree to sit
yeah.
still long enough or to participate. Has convincing them to participate or convincing parents been a challenge at all?
You know, I've been so pleasantly surprised. People are really excited in this region and all over the country. You know, I think the main question that parents ask is, you know, they're concerned, you know, is the MRI exposing their child to radiation or any dangerous factors like that? An MRI does not expose them to radiation. The only real risk is if they have unremovable metal in their body. So we do a very careful screening, you know, verbal screening, and then we actually do a metal detector, you know, make sure. But most 9, 10-year-olds don't have shrapnel in their body.
Thank goodness.
So the biggest thing we have to worry about sometimes is braces. But the kids have done great. You know, we give them lots of breaks. We give them snacks. We give them like an ABCD T-shirt and squishy brains to hold, and they win prizes. And they really enjoy themselves. A lot of times they have to wear scrubs to go in, so they just really enjoy the whole process. And we give them a picture of their brain.
Wow. Wow. That must be an eye-opener for a young, 9 or 10-year-old to say, that's what's up here.
Mm-hmm. And actually, that's one of the fun things about this study. So the National Institute of Health is the supporting body that funds the study. And there's 7 different institutes within it. And one of the best things that they've done is there's actually a group that's in charge of marketing and the website. And they've put up this awesome website that kind of – it's about junior scientists. So we like to call the participants like our junior scientists and show them brain games. And we're actually teaching them a little about the science of kind of neurodevelopment while they're participating in this study.
You may be breeding the next generation of neuroscientists and, and not know it yet, right?
Yeah. Well, I have to laugh because my son is the age of the study. And so he comes to me to some of the community events. He has a little name tag that says junior scientist and, you know, Duke Medina. And so he loves talking about it and explaining the MRI and the don't be scared. It's a lot of fun. And so I really think the kids are enjoying themselves.
I have to ask, can your son get involved in the study, or is that not appropriate?
He can't. Yeah, he can't because it's not confidential, obviously. But he's kind of practiced a lot of the tests, and he's our consultant when picking out prizes for the age group.
We're going to talk more about the study and ultimately how you're going to gather the results. But I have to bring this up because any parent who has a youngster about the age of the ones that you're studying right now and is thinking about whether it's a good time for them to get involved in sports has to be thinking about brain injuries, about concussions. So much has been written and discussed over the last few years about the risk or danger that concussions can have on developing brains. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you'll be looking at in this study?
Absolutely. That's one of the big questions. So we'll be tracking kind of number of hits, certainly full concussions or any sort of traumatic brain injuries, and trying to see if they recover quickly from it or if we really do see any long-lasting changes. And with this very advanced neuroimaging, even very subtle differences will be able to be detected. And then we can also link that with any sort of sleep problems, psychiatric problems, because some of these head injuries have been linked with symptoms of depression in particular. Track that over time. And on the flip side of that, we want to look at, are there any other extracurricular activities that are really protective and really good for brain development? So, for example, one of my interests is aerobic activity and getting kids active and reducing risk for obesity, because obesity has negative impact on the brain, especially in adults. But we don't know that much about kids. And so we're actually rolling out the Fitbit study within this. So all of our kids will be wearing a Fitbit for at least a few weeks before any neural imaging. So we can look at extent of physical activity as well as the head injury questions.
What about other behaviors? What are you looking for? Cell phones, you know. Mm-hmm. Every kid that age wants a phone. Not all of them have it yet, but, you know, they certainly have exposure to laptops and iPads. And, of course, the televisions that are ubiquitous in our lives. Mm-hmm. Will you be able to measure or study the impact of consuming content from screens in the study?
Yeah. So right now we're definitely measuring screen time. And, you know, the screen time questions are complicated because the research so far shows that some screen time, like let's say Minecraft, it's actually can be good for brain development in that it's really challenging cognitively. You know, there's a lot of spatial rotation. There's actually some physics involved. So, you know, we don't only want to measure the amount of time they're spending, because if that is a concern, but how they're spending it. So especially social media use. At 9 and 10, there's not really much going on, but very rapidly in the next couple of years. There will be. And one of the nice things about
this— So you'll be able to track that.
Yes, we'll be able to track it over time.
This is a longitudinal study.
Yeah, so. And that's the beauty of it. We're kind of capturing really detailed data before the vast majority of them have cell phones, because a lot of the, you know, research that's been done so far has been kind of cross-sectional and you don't know were these differences there beforehand. But in this study, we will really be able to answer those questions, you know, controlling for how they were before. Does the onset of new screen time usage, you know, especially kind of social media or really extensive screen time spent per day, actually alter that brain developmental trajectory? And as a parent, like, that's one of the big questions I have, because we don't know very much about that. It's a really new phenomenon.
Yeah, and not only the recreational or casual use that a kid might experience at home, but a lot of schools now requiring kids to be in front of the computer, some of them providing laptops to the kids.
Right.
We really haven't studied that, have we? The impact of sitting and consuming content from a screen versus the blackboard or a regular textbook.
Yeah. You know, there's been a little bit, you know, they're kind of small studies. So what we know so far, for example, is that if you're watching TV or something like that with your kid and you're doing it together, it looks like that actually can have positive effects. So like I said, it's not this kind of black and white topic. Although there is research showing that typing on a computer when you're learning is not as effective as handwriting notes. So, we're trying to learn more and more about that in much more detail. And then this study, what's so nice about it is we can link that up with so many other factors. So, for example, maybe my kid uses his iPad a lot, but we also engage in a lot of physical activity and emotional connection. And maybe that's protective against any of that screen time.
And so that's why having a study as large as yours with literally thousands of students, you'll be able to compare those kids who fall into that category of lots of physical activity, but also a lot of screen time versus those who may not be as active.
Right, exactly. Because maybe it's not a big deal at all as long as they're getting some physical activity every day.
You can never assume anything. You have to test it,
exactly.
Don't you? You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio is Krista Lisdow. Krista is an associate professor of psychology at UWM in the College of Letters and Science, a neuropsychologist, someone who's spent much of her career studying the way in which our brain develops and how it dictates the kind of person that we are. Krista and colleagues around the country are involved in a very, very large, first of its kind study, looking at how the adolescent brain develops. We've talked earlier in the program, Krista, about some of the concerns that parents have when thinking about brain development. Are concussions something that should keep me from getting my kid into football? What about all the screen time? But there's also the very, very serious risk as these 9 and 10-year-olds begin to move towards adolescence about the potential of them experimenting with drugs or with alcohol. Mm-hmm. Will that be studied in this great big national program that you're involved in?
Yeah, that's one of the major questions of the study. So, and that's one of the things that I was pulled onto the study because that's really been my major area of focus for my research. So we're very interested in looking at studying these kids well before the onset of substance use. So most substance use starts around age 14, 15 with kind of early experimentation. Very at-risk kids can start closer to 11, although that's fairly rare. What we've seen right now in these 9 and 10-year-olds is they're very substance naive. The vast majority of them, 99%, say they aren't curious about trying drugs or alcohol right now. They haven't tried any substances like cannabis or opiates or, cocaine or anything like that. About 26% have sipped some alcohol, so we're starting to see just the introduction of a little bit of sipping. So we're actually really studying, how did they get that alcohol? Because there's lots of questions about, is it better to give your kid alcohol or have them experiment outside of the home? Lots of people question this type of stuff. So we'll be tracking it very carefully. And we really want to look at the transition from early trying to kind of regular use to abuse or even dependence of a substance.
So you can start with that clean slate and then see what happens on in that child's life during these incredibly important developmental years.
And it's so critical because a lot of my work have looked at the effects of cannabis, but the real flaw with that research so far, cannabis or marijuana as it's commonly called, is that a lot of times we're looking when they've already started using. And it's really important to consider what did that brain and cognition and emotional functioning look like before they ever tried a substance. So that, because maybe the effects of cannabis that we think are there are really just what puts you at risk for trying it. So this will really be the gold standard study to answer some of those questions.
And as I understand it, you're in your study, you're not only looking at the physical experiences that these kids are having, but you're also looking at how their behavior or their thoughts interact with other thoughts or other experiences. Mm-hmm. This seems like such an incredibly complex way to try to measure the development. It's baffling to me how you can keep all of these different data points straight. Mm-hmm.
Well, it is almost overwhelming. And actually, one of the things that's really cool about this study is we're releasing the data every year to the entire scientific community. So it's not just the investigators that are involved at each of these research sites that'll have this data. Because you're right, it's so complex, it's so rich that really we need all the scientists out there to have access. So we're releasing the data. We've already released the first year's data. And if there's any scientists out there, you know, all you need to do is to kind of apply for access through your university at the NDA website, and they can download the data and start looking at these complex issues. So it's going to be really exciting over time to have the whole scientific community working on these problems.
So you could compare a child who has, for example, a traumatic experience. Mm-hmm. They've witnessed something. You could compare what impact that has had on their brain development to another set of children who have not witnessed that same terrible scene.
Yeah. Trauma and stress are a really important part of the study. When I've gone out to educators because the way we recruit students is I go out to principals and superintendents and get permission, and then we release flyers to their school. And I've had a lot of conversation with principals and educators around this region. And one of the first things they bring up that they're concerned about is the effects of trauma and stress, and what can they do as educators to really build in resilience around the effects of trauma and stress, and what can they do over time if a kid does experience a trauma. And this study will certainly provide data that'll really help guide those educators and parents to really help kids through any traumatic experiences.
And that particular part of the research is so relevant. We've just seen in recent weeks Oprah Winfrey getting out in front of this issue, mm-hmm. actually playing off of a Journal Sentinel investigation into what impact trauma has had in shaping the lives or the future of youngsters. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that your timing is perfect for looking at this because of the increased awareness and concern about how we help kids bounce back if they have had terrible experiences.
Yeah. And within this, we can I haven't mentioned it yet. We're doing whole genome sequencing as well. So we can really look at, you know, the genetic risk. And it's also twin-informed. So about 25% of the sample are twins. So we can really look at this, you know, genetic versus environmental impact. And we're really interviewing the parents very carefully. So we can look at parenting styles. We can look at the how a person's culture and how affiliated they are with their culture and how that might breed resilience. And so, you know, I'm very excited about all the different factors that we can bring back to parents and educators, pediatricians, so that we can really raise a healthier society.
You mentioned earlier that you'll be releasing data results each year. Unlike some studies, you won't have to wait 10 or 15 years for this to come out. As I understand it, you have this baseline that you've been able to gather from the thousands already enrolled in the study. Any indicators of any surprises there? Have you seen anything in this first assessment or snapshot of where kids' brains are at that has surprised you?
Well, I wish I could speak a lot to what's going on at the baseline, but we've just released the data, and so we're really just starting to do some analyses. So I can't – nothing is published quite yet that I can release, but I will tell you that I know that there are dozens and dozens of papers already starting to be written to try and understand. So the data on the first about 5,600 kids are being analyzed right now, and hopefully I can come back even in 6 months or so and talk about a lot of the findings. The other thing I want to say for our listeners out there that are already involved in the study is that we'll be sending newsletters out to all parents and all principals and superintendents that have been collaborators on the study that will summarize what we're finding so far. So it's really important to us that we're not just kind of doing this research in an isolated way for our own curiosity. We want to roll out the findings to all the parents and educators that are involved on an ongoing basis throughout it.
And so great opportunity to make a pitch. You said you're still looking to enroll many, many more kids here in the Milwaukee, southeastern Wisconsin area. Mm-hmm. How can they get a hold of you? How do they say, gee, this would be something that would be good for our family?
Yeah. So one of the main things is that we'll be going into schools still. I can't release which schools I'm working with right now because we haven't quite solidified things. But we're especially looking in the Milwaukee area as well as the Waukesha area. And if you do see a flyer come home with your kid that says ABCD study, you know, we do hope that you call in and sign up. We can enroll a certain number of kids just from the community that reach out to us. And so if you look at abcdstudy.org and click on the study sites, you'll find UWM and it has all of our contact information there. And you can email us or call us if you're interested in participating.
Terrific, terrific. How do you see this particular study shaping your own future work? You've been involved in so much, and we, in fact, have had you on the program before talking about the impact that marijuana use has on adolescent brains. It's been a little while, but promise we'll have you on much sooner this time around, listening to you report on these findings. Where does this take a neuroscientist like you as you look at your career development?
Oh, it's like a kid in a candy shop. I mean, the methodology of this study is so vastly superior of anything we've been able to do before. I mean, this really is like the Manhattan Project for brain development. And I have to say the collaborators on this study are just phenomenal scientists and friends, and it's just been really exciting. So for me, I'm going to continue to look at exposure effects. So really early use of these drugs, does that do anything to the brain or does it really immediately recover? At what point do we start to see the trajectory shifting? So that's one of my top questions. And then I continue to be very interested in health factors. So I'm also kind of a health psychologist. So I want to look at things that can build resilience and improve neurodevelopment, such as really good sleep, physical activity. Those are probably the top two ones that I'm interested in.
Yeah, good things for all of us, regardless of how developed or undeveloped our brain is, to focus on those. Krista, just a moment left. I want you to give that website address again for people who might be interested in participating in the program.
It's abcdstudy.org, and then you can click on the study sites. And there'll be a UWM study site that has a picture of our team and describes the site a little bit. And it has an email and phone number for you on there.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much for sharing that invitation and also for the great, great background on what sounds like a very, very exciting study of the brain, of the young brain as it develops.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to have you back with more of those results as they unfold. Krista Lisdahl, Associate Professor of Psychology, Head of the Neuropsychology Program at UWM in the College of Letters and Science, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.